Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you so much for joining. This week on the pod, we have Miss Michelle Weekly. We jump right into politics and her stance on the upcoming election. We talk about her role at Byte Federal and so many other things. Loved having her on the show. Without further ado, here's my interview with Michelle. All righty, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Michelle here. Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to join you.
Yeah, we got to meet up in Nashville and spend a little bit of time together. It was an absolute pleasure talking with you. And I've been following you for a lot longer than we've known each other. And I wanted to start with an unconventional place, and that is politics. So you are very proactively sharing some of your pro-Trump positions on X. And I wanted to give you a chance to expand on your thoughts. And specifically, there was a tweet I saw yesterday. And the video that you reshared is not necessarily relevant, but you said people crying about Trump not passing their Bitcoin only purity test are completely out of touch with reality. Get a grip. Would you like to elaborate on your thoughts and just your general position, how you see this election coming up? Because by the time this comes out, we'll be under a month from the election.
Oh my gosh.
Where's your head at?
Yeah, so, you know, I've said this a couple times. I'm going to say it again. If you went back a few years, probably prior to 2020, at any point in my life, and you told that version of me that the future version of me was going to be advocating for politics or trying to get people to vote, I would have just literally laughed in your face. You know, all of these, there's a lot of Bitcoiners who are like, no, I'm just going to opt out. You know, your vote doesn't mean anything. And that was me. I mean, that was me for the majority of my life. I lived in DC for 12 years, and the dominant thread in my life was that I was not going to be involved in politics, to the extent that, like, when you date in DC, people have conversations very early on, like, how involved do you want to be in politics? Because if you want to do that, you have to kind of be careful about your image, right? And so I would just tell people straight up, like, it's not for me. I still have this, you know, just don't tread on me, just leave me alone, like, live and let live. That was always my philosophy. And obviously that has evolved. I will probably end up back in that place. I mean, I think people have this misconception that I think we should vote for Trump and he's going to save us all and, you know, yay. And I have no delusions of that. I'll get to why I think it's so important for people to vote, and specifically now to vote for Trump. Probably what started this journey for me was leaving the country, being gone for a number of years. And it was a really interesting time that I was not here. I was not here when he came down the escalator, ran for president the first time. I did not vote in 2016. I was not living in the country. I could not have cared less. The most involvement that I had politically at that time was that I was, like, at a dinner in Shanghai, and these businessmen were all like, oh, you must be so proud. Businessman Trump giving up his beautiful life and stepping into politics and supporting you and representing you. And I was like, you know, that sounds accurate. Like, everybody loved Trump, right? He was on The Apprentice, like, everybody fawned over him, and it was whatever. I mean, so fast forward to, I come back to the US, and everything is obviously in chaos. And I still really, like, I didn't think that I was still not interested in being involved in politics. But then politics really involved itself in all of our lives, right? Like, during COVID, we were affected very significantly. And you could see the differences in people's lives. Like, here in Florida, I know a lot of people who didn't miss a day of work. They never put on a mask. After the vaccines came out, it was like, you could choose to take the vaccine or not. If you wanted to take it, it was readily accessible. But there was no, like, there was no mandates or anything. A lot of people asked me, like, well, aren't you upset about Trump doing the vaccine stuff? And I don't like it. I mean, you know, I don't agree with everything that he's done. But Trump did not do any mandates. The Biden administration did that. They're the ones that came in and said, you're going to lose your job if you don't take the jab. So, you know, I think it was really during that time that I realized how much our lives are affected by politics. Like, we can say that we don't care and we don't want to be involved, but they are involved in our lives. And even like one of my best friends was really, really heavily involved with like what was going on at the school board because she didn't want our kids to have to wear masks. And I think we can all understand that. So that was like, I think, a civics lesson for me in how much politics, especially local and state politics, matter within our lives. And then you combine that with, you know, about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, I started working in the Bitcoin industry, and the amount of regulation and just compliance and legal nonsense that we have to deal with is exponential. And that sort of like furthered my conviction that we have to be involved in shaping what's happening, right? Because you can't just say like, I mean, it's great to say, I don't care, like Bitcoin doesn't care, but we are citizens of countries and we're subject to those laws, especially as American citizens. The United States is one of like two countries in the entire world where you can leave, but you still have to pay your taxes. So, you know, the sort of final nail in the coffin for me was the execution, the ongoing execution of Chokepoint 2.0, which is something that unfortunately a lot of Bitcoiners are really not familiar with, the level and severity of the debanking that's been happening. The way that that one thing, the debanking, the way that it sort of has this network effect throughout the entire ecosystem. And really this like coordinated systemic effort to shut the entire industry down. And it's really serious. You know, we've got the Samurai guys that were arrested, the Tornado Cash that's unfolding. I mean, there's just an endless list of assaults that are happening. And unfortunately, it's not sexy or cool or exciting. People don't like to talk about it. It's complex. But what I am trying to do is raise awareness, because if things go down, if the current regime is not taken out, we're not going to have any Bitcoin products and services based in the United States. You'll have some very regulated on-ramps. I don't know if they'll ban self-custody or not. They might try. They might not even need to, because if you control the industry to such an extent, like, you don't have to go that far. And again, people are just like, oh, well, Bitcoin doesn't care. And I'm sort of like, all right, well, what Lightning wallet are you using? You know, if you're a United States citizen, you're limited to, I think at this point, it's like Strike, Cash App, you know, there's very few options. And look, those options are great. I love Strike. I support the options that are available, but your options are getting very limited and people need to play out. Like, what is going to happen if we continue to limit the options, centralize the functionality and the ability? It's not a free market, and that's not something that we want. So that's a very, very long-winded way of getting to the place that I have arrived, which is you have to vote for Trump to stop the current administration from shutting down the entire industry. And I think the biggest pushback that I get is, well, do you really trust him? And my response to that is, I don't need to trust him. I don't care if he does anything at all except change the regime, which stops the coordinated attack that's happening, right? You have all of these like players in place. And if you take enough of them out, they will at the very least have to regroup, slow things down, stop arresting people, stop making new rules and regulations. There's all kinds of regulations that are just coming to fruition that were put in place over the past 4 years. As a result of this, Byte Federal is going to be shutting down operations in several states. And, you know, I think a lot of like people that we're interacting with on Twitter are not using Bitcoin ATMs, and so they don't really care. And I understand that, but again, play that out. We are shrinking our services. We're being forced to shrink our services. Other companies are being forced to leave the country entirely Phoenix, Wall of Satoshi. I mean, all of them, right? There's nobody left except a couple of large players. And so it's a really, really dire situation, honestly, that we're in. And so, yeah, you know, like, do I think Trump is some sort of savior who's going to save us all? No, not in any way. All we need, like, what I'm hoping for is literally just stop the assault and let us try and salvage something. You know, yeah. We get 4 more years to continue to build and try and figure out, like, how do we save ourselves from this? Or, you know, just build more and better tools so that when the eventual total collapse comes, we're better prepared.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And I think I agree with you. Probably you get a sort of a front row seat to some of the, like, the regulatory scrutiny faced by, you know, companies operating in the space that I wouldn't, for example, and most people wouldn't. I guess my question is, do you think, like, if you were just to make a prediction, do you think Trump winning would help sort of foster Bitcoin adoption and help the industry move to the next level? Or do you think it would be restricted to just kind of unwinding from some of the regulatory mess that you're in today? Like, do you see him being like a positive force or just kind of neutralizing some of the negativity, if that makes sense?
Yeah. It's a good question. I think there's so much to neutralize that it's okay if that's all that happens. You know, people are really upset because he's not Bitcoin only and he's sort of going through a shitcoin phase. And that's kind of obviously related. Like, he doesn't. Would it be amazing? You know, like, look at RFK. Would it be amazing if we had an RFK style Bitcoin advocate for the presidency? Yes, absolutely. But these things come in phases and these things take time. So, you know, almost everybody has gone through like a shitcoin phase. I think that's what's happening with the Trump family now. And the purity test stuff does really bother me. One of the biggest reasons that it bothers me is, as you mentioned, I have sort of like some, I see a lot that people don't see because I have to deal with the regulation and stuff every day. And something that I didn't know prior to going into the role that I have, I didn't really realize, is all of Bitcoin and crypto is lumped together by the government and all the agencies that matter into a category called digital assets. And it's all regulated together. So as much as I dislike all of the crypto nonsense and the scamming and, you know, obviously like a lot of nonsense has happened and I don't support that. But at the same time, I just feel like so many people have lost sight of the bigger picture, which is the government. Like, it, you know, I'm not going to say it feels like a psyop, but this divide, the concept of dividing a populace so that they can't be effective in any way is very real. And I think we're sort of playing into that in Bitcoin because we have been, you know, we've all gotten so angry at each other. Like, the crypto people hate the laser-eyed maxis, and then the Bitcoin maxis, there's this large group of them who will just annihilate you if you, like, use the wrong word, right? And I'm talking about, like, normal people too. Like, even with Trump, for example, like, as he's learning, he says crypto. And I think it takes a lot of time to understand the distinction and how set apart Bitcoin is. But we have to take a step back and understand at the regulatory level, everything is a digital asset and it is regulated together. And so the more people that we have on our team advocating for the freedom for these technologies, advocating for the ability for the industries to succeed, to build, to not shut down. I mean, we just can't get so busy like fighting amongst our own little segregated population that we forget to fight the government. Like, they're taking over via regulation the Bitcoin industry and the crypto industry. And Bitcoiners are spending so much time and energy fighting crypto that, like, they're not even aware of what's happening with AML policy and the fact that, you know, the ramifications of KYC and the fact that if you want to accept Bitcoin, you're going to have to KYB. Oh, and now, by the way, we have KYT being built into a lot of places. And KYT is know your transaction. And what that basically means is that the service is required to run chain analysis. So there was a good thread with Giacomo a few weeks or months ago, but he had like trying to take some Bitcoin out of a wallet that he had, and they were asking him, he had to provide a bunch of, he had to KYC, right? Well, the reason for that is because they were running KYT, so know your transaction. So they said, you can't make this transaction unless you KYC. And that is being implemented a lot of places at very high levels, and it's very dangerous. And yeah, you know,
that's wild. I hadn't heard about KYT. I'll drop another bomb in here. So I heard a Bitcoin Mechanic on a podcast recently. He made an interesting point, and it kind of makes me wonder if having someone who just reduces the sort of constriction, the regulatory, you know, legacy, might be better than a definitively pro Bitcoin candidate. And that is because he was talking about RFK's speech in Nashville and enshrining into law the right to self-custody. And he said, that is the last thing that we want, because then they get to decide, well, how do we define self-custody? Or maybe it was the right to run your own node. I think it was the right to run your own node, not self-custody. And he said, they get to then define what is running a node, and they can tell you. And so it's almost like if they don't just allow freedom to proliferate in this space, and they try to build laws that enable us, it's like that could be more consequential when the next administration or the next Supreme Court justices come in and they get to interpret those laws so as to mean whatever the hell they want. And so it's it might be best just to have someone who doesn't understand it, but understands that I don't care and you should be able to do what you want. Like, that might be the net positive of it all.
I actually couldn't agree with you more. I believe in free markets. Absolutely. And I've always said there's only really one thing I care more about than Bitcoin, and that's freedom. And so, you know, if we believe, which I think we do, that Bitcoin is the best asset by, you know, by a miles and miles, you know, by like long shot is not. If Bitcoin is the best asset, it will win. There is no need for all of this fighting. And, you know, the only pushback I really get on that is like, oh, but people are getting scammed. And it's like, people get scammed all the time. People also gamble a lot. Like, there are some people who want to gamble. And I don't really think we should be cheering on rules and regulations that tell them that they can't. And does that mean some people make bad decisions and lose some money? Yeah, but like, they should be allowed to do that. It's their money. Yeah. So yes, I agree with you. I think keeping a free market open is very important. And there is a very serious threat of them creating allowances, but then retroactively changing the rules or the definitions. We see this in a lot of other industries. They're just changing the definitions of things. And then all of a sudden, oh, you know, JK, like, you can't do that. That's a very, very serious threat.
Yeah, I think probably people who cheer that on probably just don't appreciate that last point you made. And that is, ultimately, there are going to be lawsuits around any particular law or regulation that affects a large number of people. And someone is going to have to discern what that means, the judicial branch. And if it's a high enough profile case, that means the Supreme Court. And you're at the mercy of whoever last appointed the Supreme Court justices, right? And like, right now you might like the majority, but in 20 years you might not. And there are just so many. There's so many. Operation Choke Point has played out in X number of ways right now, but 10, 20 years from now, it could look completely, what Operation Choke Point 3.0 could happen at the judicial branch and, you know, not these regulatory agencies. And I think a lot of people lose sight of that. It's just easy to cheer on pro Bitcoin because it sounds good for Bitcoin. But the minute you start putting the word self-custody and node and these things into law, now the interpretation is available to come into play, and it can be dangerous. I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, I think, for me philosophically, I've abandoned the red team versus blue team since finding Bitcoin. I've learned enough, but I've sort of philosophically always aligned more right, I guess you would say. But the only reason I'm voting and I'm with you on Trump is I feel a debt of gratitude to the original founding fathers who signed their names on the line and said, if I'm killed, tortured, whatever for this, I don't care. And I feel like I owe it to them to exercise that right, whether I find it to be highly influential, a little influential, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And so I feel it my responsibility to say, okay, who's going to be the best person, and what are the issues that I think are most important, like the border, like freedom to transact and use the money that you want to use. And I think Trump is very clearly stronger on those points. Yeah. And for those reasons, it's to me, it's not about, can I trust him? Do I like him? Do I think he's a savior? No, but I don't think Joe Biden was either. And I don't think Kamala Harris is. And so like, I'm right. going to just pick on the handful of topics that I think one person is stronger on. So that's my take.
Yeah, I agree. Like, don't sacrifice better for perfect. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the other thing that I learned just since I started like getting more active and interested in politics is how few people actually normally vote. And so, I literally every day people are like, do you think your vote matters? And I'm like, if 10% of the population votes, no, our votes don't matter. The margins are really thin. They can maybe finagle some things and get whoever they want. But if we actually like voted in significant numbers and had people more aligned, not perfectly aligned, but just more aligned with the things that we care about, it could go a long way to, you know, helping to start fixing some of this stuff.
Yeah. And I can assure you that spending an hour waiting in line to vote is a better use of your time than an hour of watching Netflix. And so if you're going to waste time on any number of things that people waste time on, go vote. You know, I'm not claiming what level of impact it has, but it's certainly a more important exercise that we have the right to, than so many other time wasters. So
yeah, like just try, because freedom is not free. And if we don't defend it, it's lost.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, we could probably talk about the election all day. Let's talk about Bitcoin and your journey into Bitcoin. Why don't you tell me your origin story?
Sure. I got into Bitcoin. I spent a long time working for tech startups in DC, and I didn't want to go to Silicon Valley. So I moved to Dubai, because why not? And while I was living in Dubai, I got recruited to work in foreign direct investment, which is basically economic development at like country level. It's not something I really knew anything about. But I got recruited into this crazy world and thought like, wow, cool. You know, I had a big job title. I was making lots of money and, you know, I got to do all this traveling and I thought I was kind of like doing great. Foreign direct investment is the ecosystem that surrounds the World Economic Forum. So a lot of the policies and directives that you hear being spoken about at the World Economic Forum, they get executed via the FDI industry. So again, I didn't know anything about any of this, but I sort of ended up with a crash course in how the world works at like the very, very top level, how the billions, you know, we hear all the time about like billions of dollars going to Ukraine and all of this money moving. And it's political, but it's also largely facilitated by the FDI industry. So we were talking, you know, offline about like the lithium mine that they want to build and the contract that most of the money for that will come from is probably, you know, in this FDI ecosystem. So I learned all kinds of things and just got like a crash course in corruption and the way that money moves around the world and how everything is a lie and these people do genuinely believe they're better than you and they want to control your lives. So it put me in a tough position because I didn't know how to get out of it. I didn't know what to do. And it sort of shattered my entire worldview, So I was in this like weird place and I ended up, I was at a free zone conference in Cartagena, Colombia, kind of sitting in a corner because I didn't want to be there. And this Russian kid came and sat next to me and he clearly didn't want to be there either. And he was like, well, you know, there's this thing called cryptocurrency. This was in 2017. And you can hold it and nobody can tell you what to do with it. You should get some Bitcoin, get some Ethereum. He was working on the Mycelium wallet, and I was just fascinated. I had a background in computer science, so the technical side of it just made sense to me. I understood that piece really, really well right away. I set up a Google alert, and every time Bitcoin was mentioned on the internet, I would get an email, and I just read every single thing that came my way. And went down the rabbit hole, eventually was able to leave the job that I was in. I actually kind of burnt out because it was this stressful, chaotic situation. But I burnt out and Bitcoin saved me in that situation. And over time, I learned, that everything else was sort of some sort of project or business. I think of cryptocurrency as sort of like the dot-com bubble. And this is not always well received, but I think, there are a handful of other digital assets that may end up having some sort of utility. It doesn't mean that I support them or that I have any money in them, but they are being built into the traditional systems, right? Like Ethereum has this massive contract with a number of players on Wall Street. And so I think of the whole thing as like Bitcoin is the protocol to your question that you asked me in Nashville. I think of Bitcoin as like the TCP/IP protocol of the internet. And we have, other things that are websites and some of them will rise with a little bit of utility and then one day they won't exist anymore and whatever, the rest of it is whatever. And I've sort of always seen it that way. So I spent a lot of time down a lot of rabbit holes just studying. And I came back to the States in 2018. I was sort of alone in Bitcoin for a long time, even through COVID. Like I was never on Twitter until Elon Musk bought it. So I knew a couple of people in Bitcoin, like in my own life privately, but I didn't know anybody. Like I wasn't going to any conferences. I wasn't like engaged with the community. That didn't happen until like 2022, actually. I went down to Miami for the Bitcoin conference, and that was really a light bulb moment for me because I was like, oh, look at all of these people. It's not just a handful of people like on YouTube or whatever. I was pretty siloed until then. And so once I realized, the community piece of it and how many people really felt the same thing that I did, then it was just like all hands on deck. Like I don't care about anything else but helping Bitcoin, being involved in Bitcoin, having friends as Bitcoiners. Like I'm really sick of normies. And so I sort of like came back to Bitcoin. I had been consulting for those years kind of in between. I like kind of pseudo retired and did some consulting and then I came back into Bitcoin and just went. After Elon bought X, I went on there and eventually decided, okay, I'm going to talk about the things that I saw because I think that Bitcoiners will understand. So I started doing that and it took a little bit of time to get like the guts to really like be totally honest and just open about all of it. But that is what I did and now we're here.
Hey there, just a quick break and we'll get right back to the show. Wanted to encourage you to go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast where you can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We would love to talk you through how we help our clients take 100% proper self-custody of their Bitcoin. We also help with protecting your online life. We can help you set up privacy phones. We even have a Plan B residency to citizenship option, so we are able to meet all of your self-sovereignty needs. Again, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to schedule a time and learn more. Yeah, guts doesn't seem to be something that you lack in your online presence. So, well, one thing you said, you talked about like other cryptocurrencies, other projects, and I think we probably align on that. I guess my pushback for anyone promoting another product or their existence in general is really when they think they're in competition for global money with Bitcoin. Like as Trump said, keep playing around with your crypto, you know, like if there's some utility that you think you're bringing and like maybe there's a market for trading NFTs on Ethereum, like great. I think where I have a hard time is a lot of those, you know, so-called influencers in that space are like, yeah, Bitcoin's going to die and my coin is going to take over the world. And it's like, now you're creating a distraction. Yeah. And there are millions of people who are going to miss out, misunderstand, be confused. And I think that's where my, like, I don't have any issue with people wanting to create other projects that have a token. Like if you are a video game developer and you want to have a blockchain, you know, distributed token as part of your gaming environment, like who cares? Like, that's great. Right. No one thinks that that's going to replace the Federal Reserve.
Yeah.
It's when you have people who are fighting against Bitcoin as slow or, you know, dinosaur technology or whatever, you know, FUD they push,
right,
in support of something else that's way more centralized, way less secure, has a, you know, a CEO and a customer support team. And it's like, man, like, you know, I defend the right to exist, but I don't like them. You know, I don't like what they're doing. It's kind of my two cents.
I will say that's actually the best explanation that I've ever heard. And I agree with you entirely. I think one sort of like area where I lack information is about the, like what the influencers were doing and stuff. Like I wasn't on Twitter. So there's a lot of like people with, you know, 500,000 followers and I have no idea who they are or what kind of scams they were pushing or any of that. Like I kind of came in ignorantly when I came onto Twitter after Elon Musk bought it. And I've never really like sat down and taken the time to see like who was promoting what, because it's just, I mean, what a waste of my time and energy. But you know, I do agree with you entirely. If anyone thinks that anything is replacing Bitcoin or taking over Bitcoin, I mean, that's just nonsense to me. I think, you know, sometimes we get so far into these things that it's also, you have to like remind yourself how far behind regular people are. And I'm sort of reminding myself of this all day, every day, that you have to remember where like the normie is. And so it is important to, you know, counter those narratives. But I just think doing it in like an educated way, you know, the explanation you just provided is much more effective than don't use the fucking word crypto. Like, yeah, yeah. That, you know, like there's no information in that rant, like educate people.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, like at this point I'm allergic to the word blockchain and crypto. Yeah. I mean, you hear people throwing around buzzwords. But like at the same time, like I've said this before on the podcast, like I have a brother-in-law who works for a crypto company. And he's a great guy. He's not trying to scam anyone, you know?
Right.
And if they think that there's some sort of utility that maybe I don't particularly value, that's fine. It's, you know, it's the people who are like pushing it as a global currency and minimizing Bitcoin's potential influence that bother me. Okay. Let's go back to you mentioned we were talking about Bitcoin as a protocol or a software.
Yes.
Could you sort of define just in very general terms how you think of a protocol versus software and then why you think Bitcoin is a protocol?
Yeah. Well, a protocol is really like a set of rules, right? And so like the internet is a protocol. And generally, it's a set of rules that govern how data is communicated, how different devices, be it your cell phone, your laptop, whatever it is, interact with each other. And then on the other hand, we so it's like a set of rules that is governing something, generally data communications. And then software, on the other hand, is something that has to be executed, that performs a specific task. So, you know, even you turn your computer on, you're executing the OS that's running your device. You know, you're on your iPhone, you click the app, an app opens, that's software that's being executed, and it has a specific...
Like a function.
Exactly. It executes a specific function. So I, you know, running the Bitcoin, to me, the Bitcoin is a protocol, and the Bitcoin protocol is dependent on, you know, when people are running nodes, they're running software that executes and it maintains the protocol. So I'm always open to like being wrong or a debate or additional information, but I think to me, Bitcoin is a protocol and it is dependent on software. We have Bitcoin Core, we have Bitcoin Knots, and I don't know if there are any other, you know, if there's, you might know better than me, actually, if there are any other options that people are using at any scale.
Yeah, I mean, Bitcoin Core is by far the most dominant. I think someone actually replied to your poll that you shared on X about this.
Yeah.
And his comment was Bitcoin is the protocol. Knots and Bitcoin Core are the software that make use of that protocol, just like your, you know, an app on your computer, you know, an internet connected app uses TCP/IP. There are a lot of protocols, but for people who aren't, you know, web developers or, you know, programmers, and they don't really understand functionally and mechanically how those things work.
Yeah.
It's easy to not recognize it. And for the average normie, to be fair, I think understanding the difference isn't that important. But I think it's a useful sort of mental exercise to walk through as someone who's in Bitcoin, who needs to understand like, what is this thing and what is it doing, you know, under the hood.
I agree with both points. I think, you know, there's a lot of things people use every day that they don't understand. People don't understand how the internet works, how their money works, how the banks work, and that's okay. But yes, I think people that are more involved, it's important for us to understand these things and also to maintain open conversations about them. I stirred up some trouble, you know, about Bitcoin Core a while back, and I hate to bring that up, but I think it's an important conversation about, like, is Bitcoin Core centralized? Like, do enough people have merge access? And these are highly technical conversations, but you know, I spoke to a lot of people that are running nodes that have no idea. A lot of people have no idea how it all works. And I just think the more information that more people have, the better we can make decisions that are going to benefit Bitcoin and ensure that it is as successful as we know that it should be.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good transition into what you're working on. So maybe talk a bit about Byte Federal and what services you provide, what sort of the vision for the company is.
Sure. So I've been with Byte Federal for about a year and a half, and they're best known for being a Bitcoin ATM company. We are one of the top 10 Bitcoin ATM operators and manufacturers globally. We are currently licensed in 5 different countries, and So we build all of the ATMs ourselves, we maintain the network, and we wrote the software code that runs them. So we really manage the full stack, which sets us apart. I don't think that there's anyone else doing that. Largely within the Bitcoin ATM space, you have hardware people and software people, but we're really the only ones doing the full stack. So that's super awesome to me.
You're also deploying them as well, though. So like it's your network of ATMs. So really from literally the creation of this product to its use in the market is all happening under. Okay.
Yeah. And maintenance as well. You know,
okay.
We don't outsource anything. So machine breaks somewhere, we've got a logistics team, somebody goes and fixes it.
Wow.
So it's awesome. And you know, we have a large development team. We, you know, we're we are a software development company as well, because again, we've written all of the code that runs the machines. Everything that we do largely is done in-house. And so there's a handful of other products and services that over the past few years, Byte Federal has developed. For the most part, they have not been taken to market. And this is largely what I was brought in for, was to help with the last sort of like 20% of development. You know, you write a bunch of code and you have something that works really well. You have to make sure that it's a good like product market fit and that it makes sense and that it's easy to use. And so that's what I'm doing. And the two places that I've been most focused on that is with our point of sale system. So we do have a point of sale system that merchants can use to accept Bitcoin. And that is, you know, a physical handheld device that you can use in a retail location. We also have a number of e-commerce tools, a lot of different solutions. And that has been, I don't want to say a nightmare regulatorily, but if I'm being honest, it has been. And then the other thing that we're really focused on is our wallet. We have a non-custodial wallet that you can hold your Bitcoin in, not large amounts of all of your Bitcoin, but you can hold a little bit of money in your wallet and you can do so, you know, with your own keys. It's non-custodial. And also it's a Lightning wallet. It does support a handful of other coins, but the wallets are, you set the wallets up one by one. So we're really focused on we are not Bitcoin only, but 98% of our business is with Bitcoin. And so we put about 98% of our resources into Bitcoin, and that's our focus.
Is that a mobile app? Is that something that integrates with your POS solutions and your e-commerce solutions?
It is. Yeah. So it's a mobile app and you can download it and try it out. We still have Lightning enabled and we are working really hard to defend our Lightning setup so that we don't have to disable Lightning the way that everybody else has. I'm hoping to have an announcement about that soon, but as with almost everything else we are doing, there are just like endless meetings with lawyers to deal with. And we think we've found a solution and then another piece of regulation happens and we have to go back and rework things. So it is a task.
So who are your regulators? Like, who are you dealing with?
Well, we're a fully licensed MSB. So that's a money services business. And so there's a number of government agencies that you have to deal with the, you know, there's the Department of Treasury, there's a lot of it is with the DOT, you know, but there's all kinds of alphabet agencies that we have to report to and comply with. It sucks. It really sucks. But the truth is that if you're going to do anything at scale, anything that gets any attention, that's adopted widely enough that people know who you are and what you're doing, you have to deal with this regulation. And so this kind of goes back to Trump. It's like, I never expected to be involved in all of this. Like, I was so excited to get this job in Bitcoin, you know, okay, product development. We have an app. We're going to rebrand it. We're going to make it beautiful. This is amazing. I never expected that would like parlay into now I'm an expert in, you know, alphabet regulation and KYC, AML law. Unfortunately, it has. And people are like, well, you know, why are you complying? And besides the obvious, like, I don't really want to go to jail. It's just a fact of the matter that we have to deal with the regulation. And so, again, that's really what's driving my advocacy of we need to dial back the regulation, like abolish a lot of it. And the things that we can't get abolished, let's get a freaking better handle on so that it's not so complicated. You know, we are a very large business. We have a team of lawyers and compliance folks, but like, it sucks. You know, we're like just big enough to be able to fight the fights that we're fighting. And as you saw with a number of people who left the US recently, they just don't have the money to pay a bunch of lawyers to make sure they don't go to jail, right? And I hate that. Like, I hate that you couldn't have just a great idea and a couple of developers and do whatever you want, build an amazing product or service and put it out into the world. You know, I think Phoenix, the Phoenix wallet was one of my favorite Lightning wallets, Wallet of Satoshi. And, you know, all of these were great tools for people to use and interact with their Bitcoin. But they were smaller teams and they were not able to, I don't want to say comply hard enough, but that's sort of the reality. And so we need to scale back the compliance requirements so that we have the freedom to innovate and have these industries thrive again in the United States.
No, I think you're exactly right. And I think the, again, the challenge just goes back to like the visibility that most people don't have into this. Like when you are developing a product in a highly regulated environment, it becomes apparent how ridiculous it is. You know, it's like home builders in California or New York probably understand that very well.
Yes.
But if you're just working, you know, at a hair salon in Texas, the last thing on your mind is regulatory scrutiny, right? And that's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so they don't understand the economic drain that this creates. And it is incredibly impactful. I sold enterprise software to in-house legal counsel for a decade, and we were helping them solve a compliance problem. And then I thought, you know, I was doing God's work and this was so important. And to some degree it was, because they had to do it, but it just should never have been.
Right.
You know, like, right. like what I was doing was valuable only because they wrote a stupid, well,
regulation.
A bunch of states all had their own. Yeah. A bunch of states had their own regulations, and then there were federal laws and then EU oriented law. And it's like,
yeah,
so there's so much waste. And like, if we would just cut the regulatory state, promote nuclear power and adopt Bitcoin, so much of the nonsense would just be eviscerated. So I can empathize. I probably can't empathize fully with you because you are like in the thick of it, but it's a real problem that most people just can't possibly appreciate.
Yeah.
Hey, we're coming up close to an hour. Are you good on time? Or
I am. I'm good on time. Yeah.
Okay. So I know you've only been there for a year and a half, but you talked a lot about the regulatory environment. Have things gotten progressively worse, or is it kind of the same as when you started, or do you see a trend in terms of like regulatory complexity that you have to deal with?
It's trending worse, no doubt. So I came and working full time. I had met the guys, you know, our CTO and a couple of the developers a while. I spent a few months talking to them and sort of working out the details before I like went in and worked full time. And I think right as I was starting, it was March or May that ChokePoint 2.0 like really happened. And it was right, I started like right after that. So we had like, when I started talking with them, we had banking fully integrated into the wallet. Like you could download the Byte Federal wallet and have, like a bank account, a checking number, a routing number, and you could actually use that fully for all of the financial like services needs that you might. Well, we don't have like lending, but you know, you could have a bank account. And they had just lost that as I was coming in. So we had to, you know, take all that, comment the code out and turn all those services off. And that was a result of the debanking. We lost our banking partner, so we couldn't continue to facilitate those services. We were working through a rebrand. So we kind of focused on rebranding and just like going through like nitty gritty, like redesigning all the screens and things like that. All the while in the background, like working on getting a new banking partner in place. And I think there was this period of time where we were sort of like, willfully, ignorantly hoping we'll just get a new banking partner and we'll turn it all back on. But that was not the case. It just kind of got worse and worse and worse. And we had to turn off more and more services. We had some services in the wallet that I'm not going to name, but we turned them off. Tools that people want, you know, we built the tools that people would want to use. No, it's gotten, all of that is to say, like, it's gotten so much worse. So we shut down banking because we lost our banking partner. And, we would sort of lay out a way forward and get working on it. And then we would there would be some sort of new enforcement action that happened that had ramifications that we had to adjust to, or new regulations that were coming into play. You know, they're passing all kinds of stuff at rapid speed, and there's like this trickle down effect. And then on top of that, you have all of the regulation by enforcement where they're reinterpreting, you know, longstanding understandings. Like, what is a money transmitter? Like, you know, when do you need an MTL? And so that's another thing that's been happening over the past, you know, year to 2 years, is all of these states coming out and saying you need a money transmission license. So, you know, we have someone that's almost entirely dedicated on MTLs, and we have to do everything state by state. And then on top of that, you have federal nonsense. I was not able to speak about it extensively, but I now can say through the end of last year, we were under FinCEN audit. So we actually had FinCEN auditors in our offices. There were a handful of times I was like screaming on the internet about some stuff that was happening regulatorily, and we literally had a FinCEN lady sitting downstairs. So, you know, like, and the other thing I'll say about that is, like, if you look at who they're auditing, how much they're auditing, the way that they're going about the auditing, the questions that they're asking, the sort of line of the march step that's happening, it becomes very clear what they're trying to do. And so, like, when I say they're trying to shut us all down, I assure you, unfortunately, they are working to shut everyone down. And so we have to fight back against it.
Is a lot of this, I can't remember what the bank was, but there's some bank in the US that either is about to be approved or was just approved to custody Bitcoin.
Is it BNY?
Yeah. It was BNY. And, yeah. This is not something I'm excited about. I don't really like banks, but I understand that they're, you know, a necessary means to an end today. Is the excitement around that sort of related to what you were talking about? You had to comment out all the code related to, you know, like the checking account function disappeared. Is the excitement that you could have a bank who can, you can have like a Bitcoin checking account and your fiat checking account, and you can, it sort of integrates within the existing financial system like seamlessly? Is that what it is? Or
like what we're working towards? Or
yeah, like is the reason why that would be a big deal for banks to be able to custody Bitcoin, because it would open the doors for, you know, folks like you to be able to then re-support like this this more seamless integration of Bitcoin and fiat,
yeah,
in an app?
Unfortunately, I don't think that they are as connected or correlated as it may seem. So I don't understand. I haven't looked into extensively yet what they've approved, but my understanding and my assumption would be that the bank can hold Bitcoin, but they're not going to just give you, they're not going to give you the access that you refer to to your Bitcoin. It's going to be a much, much more like controlled and regulated situation. And I actually don't know, is it at the institutional level or is it retail?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess I was thinking you all are working with retail. I was thinking maybe that could be like a conduit for working, you know, with a bank to do what you all were trying to do. But my guess is it probably allows them to compete with Coinbase, you know, for ETF, you know, custody or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how it plays out. But again, I think it's kind of like a lot of things. Like Bitcoiners complain about the ETFs, and I don't like them either, but they're inevitable, right?
Yeah.
And banks are going to, you know, as Bitcoin adoption continues to grow, they're going to want a piece of the pie. So I think it's more, you know, just a matter of us taking it upon ourselves to educate and inform people on the right way to custody and the right way to use Bitcoin and what their options are and the compromises that you make when you do it other ways, because it will be easy for people to get sucked into just working with their bank and thinking they have Bitcoin when really they have fractional reserve Bitcoin in an IOU format or whatever. But that's,
I'm significantly concerned about this, honestly. Yeah. Like, you know, we don't want that to happen, and it's happening. You know,
Yeah, I think it's the that'll be interesting because people have grown accustomed to, I think, like the FTX rug style rug pull, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, crypto companies. But what happens when there's a bank run on Bitcoin?
Yeah.
And they don't have it. It turns out that they were just, you know, making loans. It's like now right. Bitcoin, there aren't 21 million Bitcoin. There are, you know, 20 billion Bitcoin because they've right. been loaning them out, or at least that's, you know. But, you know, again, this goes back to, I think, a point that I make probably too often on the podcast and in our weekly news recaps. But I think there's just a point of max pain that people need to reach before they're moved to change course. And I think when it comes to, you know, the money printing and sort of the traditional issues that we talk about a lot in Bitcoin, people are going to need to not be able to afford their groceries before they move to Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
And I think on this front, people are going to have to get rug pulled by a bank or have a experience a real run on a bank just with fiat to realize I can't just trust my bank blindly. Yeah. The good thing is, the bad thing is a lot of pain. The good thing is, I think all roads lead to Bitcoin because it's such a fragile construct that we in which we live right now.
Yeah, no, I agree very much with that. You know, you look at it can be hard to orange pill Americans, but we have a lot of developers. One of my favorite things actually about Bifederal is that most of our dev team is from countries that have experienced hyperinflation. You know, Venezuela, Argentina, our CTO fled communist Germany. So I think, you know, as with almost anything, people do need to experience it themselves. Just look, for example, like at the bank run in Lebanon or what happened in Nigeria. And you don't have to orange pill those people. They get it. They just get it. And I worry about that happening here in the United States, but I think it's probably inevitable. And then we will pivot from, you know, educating about the importance of Bitcoin to just here's how it works, because people will just know they need it. And so, you know, I feel like it's one of the reasons I like you guys. I love what you guys are doing because, you know, you're focused on building tools that people are going to need. And that's really important. And that's what we're trying to do at Bifederal as well. And the more options that people have when they do hit that moment where they have to get Bitcoin, they have to do something because they've been cut off from their bank or the banks have all gone under or we hyperinflate the dollar, whatever that, you know, however that plays out. I just want people to have as many options as possible
yeah.
to, you know, secure their Bitcoin, interact with their Bitcoin, use their Bitcoin.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. Back to the free market philosophy that we both share. Just a couple more questions for you. So one thing, are there any new products from Bifederal we should be looking out for? Just anything you're excited about that you guys are working on that you can share?
I am really excited about the wallet. There's no new products that I have not yet mentioned, but there are a couple features that we may be able to announce soon with the wallet. So stand by for that. And, you know, I've been hesitant to like tell everybody to go and use it because I want to make sure that it works really, really well before I'm doing that. But feel free to download it, play around with it, DM me, tell me if something's not working. You know, it might be in QA already, but, we're working on it. And, we are working on getting some of the banking features back. And if that happens, I think that'll be really cool. We're closer than we've ever been. So that, you know, that might be coming soon. And it's not necessarily a product, but we did ship out yesterday some new machines to a new country entirely. And I'm hoping they get there before the dock worker strike, like,
oh yeah,
prevents them from crossing the seas.
Yeah.
So...
Well, good. Well, exciting stuff. Okay. Yeah. Last question for you. I ask this at the end for everyone. This is the bonus. What is an unpopular opinion that you hold? And you get bonus points if it offends Bitcoiners.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of those. I would say the biggest one really is that if Bitcoin doesn't win within a free market, like, has it really won? I am not a fan of regulating into Bitcoin only. I am a fan of abolishing regulation so that it doesn't apply anywhere. And I can't believe that that's an unpopular opinion, but it apparently is. You know, I actually prefer what's happening in Argentina over what's happening in El Salvador. I love El Salvador. I think it's an incredible country, and I'm very excited about what's happening there. But Argentina is opening a free market, and let Bitcoin win within a free market.
Yeah, that's a good one. I thought you were going to say that the NFL is for beta males.
Oh man, people take everything I say so seriously, and like, you guys got to remember, sometimes I just say shit like for entertainment. Like, oh my gosh.
I saw you share that, and like, I was like, oh, I wonder what the comments are on this.
It was
like, people are like, you know, why do you get to decide the rules? And you're like, Trump card. Only beta males think that some chick gets to write the rules on the internet.
That's right. Like, why are you listening to me? Like, I'm just here to run my mouth. Like, you know, like, who cares what I say?
So I'm curious then, what about for me as a guy who just doesn't mm-hmm. really spend a lot of time thinking about sports? Am I beta or alpha for that?
No, you're totally alpha.
Okay,
you're
good,
awesome.
Good.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And, you know, like, it's funny because my dad and my brother are such big football fans.
I'm like, you guys,
like, you take this all shit. You take it all way too seriously. Like, you know, it's okay. Like, watch the game. I actually don't care. But but I will say there's something about, like, the obsession and prioritization of, you know, people who, like, frame their whole lives around it. I'm not into that. Like, do something more useful with yourself.
Yeah, no, I think we can agree on that. That's not an unpopular opinion with me.
Yeah.
All right, Michelle, why don't you give a handoff? Where can people find you, learn more about Byte Federal?
Sure. So primarily on X. I got to get over calling it Twitter. That's the only place that I am. I am on Noster, but you know, it needs a little bit of work. So I am mostly on Twitter, on X. It's just my name, Michelle Weekly. And you can find Byte Federal there as well. Byte Federal is on all major social media platforms. But primarily, you know, we're looking to interact with people on X. So
perfect. Yeah. Well, Michelle, this has been, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, don't take everything I say too seriously.
You got some hot takes though. So you're a fun account to follow. That's for sure. So
thank you, everyone
check out Michelle. Michelle, thank you so much for your time. It's been a blast catching up, had a lot of fun, and look forward to talking with you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. And thank you for being such a great voice. I've been very impressed with, like, all of your takes and questions. And I'm so glad we were able to connect in Nashville, and we'll talk again soon.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
All righty. Hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Michelle is a wealth of knowledge, and as usual, she held no punches in sharing her opinions. Make sure to check her out on X. She's a very fun account to follow because you never have to guess what she's thinking about anything. We all love that about her. And then check out Byte Federal if any of the services she described that they offer would be useful to you or your business perhaps. Make sure to go look at Byte Federal. And then finally, if you need help with Bitcoin self-custody done the right way the first time, if you need help with online privacy, setting up a privacy phone, or even a Plan B residency option, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team to discuss in more detail. And then be sure to check us out on X. We're at thebitcoinway_. And then you can follow me there as well, at @theothermjordan. Would love any feedback, comments, suggestions for the show. And I think that's all I've got for you today. Keep an eye out for another episode next week. See you then.